What's up, guys? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Thursday, May 3rd, 2018. I'm Tim Geddes, joined by the Reverend Jared Petty.
Doki Doki, my friend.
I always want to clap for you.
Oh, please
even
do.
Even though you're not like a you're not one of the guys, but...
Not one of the guys.
God, Kevin.
This has like become like the continual reminder.
Yeah.
Contractor.
Uh-huh.
Side character.
I said you're one of the guys.
Yes. Okay. Oh, I am one of the... I thought you said you're not one of the guys.
No, that's what I'm saying. You are one of the guys, which is why it's weird that I feel like you're not. You know,
I'm getting like this. Oh, now I feel bad. I'm like
you shouldn't
sad.
Feel bad.
You were so
feel
kind
good.
Of you.
You
yeah,
should feel so good.
Kevin's giving me a complex. That's what it is. He's been
That's
all like
the Kevin complex.
He's
it
been
is.
Reminding me. He's playing that power play about that desk. He's like, this isn't your desk.
Yeah.
He keeps reminding
he
me
loves,
about it.
He loves to do that. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Kind of Funny Games Daily each and every weekday right here on twitch.tv/Kind of Funny Games. We get together to talk about all the video game news that you need to know. You get it on podcast services around the globe, or you can get the YouTube video on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames when it goes live approximately at 2 p.m.
Ooh.
Pacific time every day. So however you want to do things, if you want to watch live, you want to listen, you want to watch, you got options. We're here for you, and we support you, and we're happy that you support us. You
we
can
are.
Support us by going to patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. That is our sponsor for this week. It's really cool. Andy made me realize something that I hadn't thought about before. We always talk about, oh, for just a dollar, you get the party mode early, you get this. Technically, for just 25 cents, you get a party mode early, because the dollar for the month gets you four party modes early.
Wow.
So if you think about it that way, you got four quarters lying around.
You do.
Is party mode worth the quarter?
You got it's that on your couch.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, if you can't find it, dig through your couch cushions. It's probably there.
Mm-hmm. Give it to us. That'd be great.
I'm all right with that.
A little bit of housekeeping. Greg is currently in L.A. doing the Movie Fights Screen Junkies charity event for women in film. You can go to screenjunkies.com/charity event to watch along there. I'm not sure of the timing, the details on that.
Oh.
But if you go to screenjunkies.com/charity event, I'm sure it's all there. It's a live thing. I'm sure Greg will take his shirt off at some point. Because the thing about Greg Miller is you put him around his friends, he's going to take his shirt off.
Yeah.
You put him around a group of people he doesn't know, he's going to walk in shirtless and somehow get more naked.
I feel like Greg, in another life, he was one of those guys you see in like documentaries from the early 70s that walked around their town all the time in blue jeans and no shirt. Like, you just see these people in the background. There was a period of time in American life where some people just walked around in jeans and no shirt for some reason. I think Greg was just a man out of his own time.
I believe it, man. I fucking believe it.
Yeah.
But now it is time to begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We got five news stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Hell yes. Cool, Greg.
Excellent.
Thank you for that. Number one, this comes from the PlayStation blog. Ooh. God of War is the fastest selling PlayStation 4 exclusive. God of War is now the fastest selling PS4 exclusive per the PlayStation blog. The game sold over 3.1 million copies worldwide after 3 days available from April 20th to 22nd. That is unreal.
That's a lot of sales.
Sony Santa Monica studio head Shannon Studstill shared a message celebrating the achievement. She said, quote, I'd like to personally thank the millions of fans around the world who decided to embark on Kratos' latest adventure with us. Your support is truly inspiring, and it's the reason why we push ourselves every day to go beyond the boundaries of play. For some context here,
yeah.
Jared, earlier this year, Horizon Zero Dawn became the most successful new first-party franchise to launch on PS4, selling over 7.6 million copies in 1 year.
So they're already almost halfway there.
Almost halfway there. Obviously an established franchise.
Yeah.
God of War kind of transcends into that mainstream kind of bro gamer, as mm-hmm. well as hardcore gamers, as well as people that are just interested in video games.
But a long dormant franchise and a complete revision. God of War never held a lot of appeal for me. It was not my thing. I admired its technical achievements, but I think that not only is this grabbing people that are familiar with the name, but also just the word of mouth mm-hmm. that's gotten around very quickly. And you know, you stop and take notice. It's kind of great to see this year that a lot of really good games are actually being commercially rewarded
mm-hmm.
for the recognition they're getting.
Yeah.
Things like Cuphead or Celeste appear to be doing very well.
Yeah.
And that's moving forward with God of War, unsurprisingly. But there are years where you'd be like, man, that was a great game and nobody bought it.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like people are actually buying
yeah.
really good games. So
no,
yay, good for you. You did it.
3.1 million in 3 days.
Yeah.
And I mean, again, that's only the 3 days. Like, we're now 2 weeks past that. So...
Mm-hmm.
Where is it now? Like, I wonder if it's, I wonder when it's going to eclipse Horizon Zero Dawn, because it will happen.
I think very quickly.
Yeah.
I mean, people are running out. It's literally a system seller. We how many messages did we receive from people like, should I buy a pro?
Yep.
Just go out and
tell you're right. Yeah, it's a second system seller in some cases where people have a PS4 and they're like, you know what? I'm going to upgrade for this game.
Which is not something I was smart enough to consider. I mean, I'm sure Sony had projections on this internally. I never really thought about the fact that, you know, what if we produce something so beautiful first party that people run out and buy a second console just to play it? Well done. Mm-hmm. Well done, Sony. And that'll be the part we may never be able to measure. I'd love to see the stats on how many pros and PS4s sold around the same month as God of War.
I'm sure if there's a good story to be told, we'll hear it from Sony. And if the correlation isn't strong enough to like have some numbers that sound really impressive, I think they might back off of it because we normally see that type of stuff from them.
Yeah, even if they sold like 200,000 units, that's still, you know, multiply that by the cost of PlayStation and you're talking tens of millions of dollars in revenue right there. Mm-hmm. That's extraordinary.
Yeah. As far as I know, they haven't separated the PS4 and PS4 Pro sales numbers. Like, we don't know how the PS4 Pro has done. Is that correct?
I don't know.
Yeah, let us know. Kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. You can be part of the show. It's fun.
Make us right.
Make us right, man. That's all we want to do.
Yeah.
Zach Dalton writes in and says,
what's that, Zach?
With Sony announcing God of War selling 3.1 million copies in 3 days, thus setting the bar as the fastest selling PS4 exclusive, do you think any of the upcoming exclusives, Spider-Man, Last of Us 2, Death Stranding, etc., have a chance of beating that record? Or selling more copies overall?
Sure, absolutely. I think that's entirely possible. I'm not a prognosticator. I don't know the strength of these franchises. Spider-Man has more brand recognition outside of gaming than just about anything. So if the Spider-Man game is excellent, it'll probably bring people in that wouldn't otherwise purchase God of War. Also, it's not going to have to worry about that kind of more mature vibe. Mm-hmm. And that may open up, you know, kids can likely get the Spider-Man game. That always helps. Last of Us is a follow-up to one of the most beloved first-party games in any platform of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's good, people are certainly going to rush out and buy it, and that could easily eclipse it. Death Stranding, I don't have a clue. It's going to sell a lot of copies. I think Death Stranding could be a 10 or a 4, and I'm not sure how much it would affect its sales.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I agree with you on that. I feel like Death Stranding is going to end up selling a lot of copies. Mm-hmm. I don't think that right out the gate it's going to have this kind of like huge kind of jump off point, because I feel like at this point we're getting kind of into the more hardcore where it's like, yeah, Metal Gear Solid was a name, but it's like, okay, Kojima's a name. Okay, like they have all these famous actors and stuff. So it's like we're getting to a point where it's like there are reasons for people to be interested, but it's not as overall, this is for everyone like God of War is. And I think Spider-Man as well. Like Spider-Man, the only thing that I think will hold Spider-Man back from beating God of War is the reviews. I feel like it is the type of game that so many people are going to buy it. It looks amazing. But I feel like the difference between an 8 and a 10 is huge in this case, because the God of War getting 10s, I think, is a big proponent in why it's selling as
the
well.
The 10s were a lot of it. The uniqueness was a lot of it. And the fact that it was such a radical shift on a well-established franchise. Mm-hmm. I mean, if this were Spider-Man 4, let's say there had been one Spider-Man 1 through 3, and they were all these beloved, awesome action games. And then Spider-Man 4 was also an even more awesome action game that happened to have an incredible story. Maybe it would be God of Warring today.
Yeah.
But it's not set up the way that God of War was.
Mm-hmm.
And credit to Sony for having the fortitude to jump forward and just be like, you know what, we're going to do this.
I mean, even looking back to last year with Horizon and like looking at those numbers, like that is extremely impressive for a new IP coming out, because it's like those are like Uncharted numbers.
Oh, yeah.
So I think Spider-Man is going to do really well. If I were to bet, I don't know, it's close, but I think that Spider-Man is the one that has the chance to beat God of War.
Mm-hmm.
And Lifetime, I don't know that it will.
Yeah, I don't know Lifetime either. We always have our beloved games, and, what's that old word? It's the zeitgeist.
Mm-hmm.
God of War is a game we'll be talking about to the end of the year. It's going to be in every Game of the Year discussion we have. It's going to be in every Game of the Generation discussion we have, and it's entering Games of All Time territory.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be hard to beat.
Yeah, definitely. Next news story. This is a little bit of a required viewing, if you want to do it yourself. New footage of Beyond Good and Evil 2. Some pre-alpha footage is out there. A lot of the words here I got from Polygon, from their kind of write-up about what they saw. It's 45 seconds of tech demo-y looking stuff, but they're playing it like it's gameplay. The Space Monkey Report is the name of the thing that they've been doing. This is the second one now,
okay,
where Ubisoft kind of updates people on the status of Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Why is it a space monkey?
That's a Beyond Good and Evil thing. They're okay. Space monkeys.
Not a space dog? Not a Laika the space dog?
No. Do you remember the space simians? Captain Simian and the space monkeys?
I remember, yeah. I didn't.
Unrelated to this, but fun show. We had a first look at the character creation system. As they said last year, you'll be able to play as humans and animal hybrids. This shit looked crazy as hell. It's like you see just the model of a human, and then it just shifts into a monkey, and then it shifts into like a crocodile, and it shifts into like, and it's all in real time, and it's like, it looks like the weird fusion between human and animal is very impressive.
Very looking. Island of Dr. Moreau.
Yes.
Oh, okay, I like that.
And they confirmed this, the tool that you'll use through the creation of all the diverse NPCs. There's customizable ships. We see a little bit of that. And then there was like some combat and ship maneuver gameplay going on.
Okay.
Looks really cool. Looks really fun. Does not look like Beyond Good and Evil. I'm interested in their choice to name it 2, even though it's a prequel, and it looks like the gameplay is absolutely different.
Well, I mean, they named 2 because I think there's pretty good evidence that 2 was probably going to sell better than 0.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you name something 0, and right away, I think there's a kind of a shudder goes through the marketing department, unless it's a really, really strong IP.
Star Fox.
Huh?
Star Fox.
Yeah, that should have been good.
It should have been good.
It's so close.
And it wasn't.
So close.
So far. So damn far. I feel like we thought about this before.
I want a Star Fox Zero remake. I feel like there's a good game in there. Or just a new Star Fox. How about that?
Just give me a new Star Fox.
Bam.
Don't fuck it up.
Ba-dun.
So good.
Dun, 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 dun.
That music. So the creative director, Mike Ansel, was being interviewed. And he said, this is not scripted. It's really systemic. It's really epic things that you can live out with your friends. So there's a big focus on co-op in Beyond Good and Evil 2.
Okay.
The developers mentioned that Beyond Good and Evil 2 will offer battles between massive airships, dogfights between fighter pilots, and, in an homage to the original Beyond Good and Evil, melee combat with swords. They also said the game world, the solar system, is known as System 3, and it will be seamless with no loading. Players will create a character and step into the role of a pirate captain, but they'll have crew members with individual responsibilities like medic and spy. It's unclear if these can be human-controlled characters or AI allies. And still acknowledged that today's gameplay clip was really short, but said that Ubisoft is saving a lot more for E3, including a more in-depth discussion of game mechanics. Beyond Good and Evil 2 currently has no confirmed release window or platforms. Interested parties can participate in the development process through what Ubisoft refers to as the Space Monkey Program.
You can
go check that out. So this is cool. We're getting some confirmation that we're going to see the game at E3.
Yeah.
If what they're showing now is any indication of where they're at with this game, it's a 2022, 2021 game.
You know what? I'm just happy. So this come along in 2030. As long as I get it.
Yeah.
I'm really okay. You just knowing it exists.
Beyond Good and Evil fan?
Oh, I love Beyond Good and Evil. Yeah, that's... I like... You know, I don't want to do a breakdown here. Yes, I love it. It's unique. It's thoughtful. It's powerful. It's one of those games that manages to say something and still be exciting and fun the entire time. Great writing, great characters. We don't have enough video games starring photographers, especially space Pokemon photographers.
Snap. Huh? Pokemon Snap, Fatal Frame.
We do. That's true. But do we remember the photographers in either of those games?
In Pokemon Snap?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Talking about my boy Todd? Of course.
Well done. I'm very, very impressed. You know, Pokemon Snap seems like just such a fit for the Switch. How has that not happened?
I don't, you know what? I don't want to go down this path because I don't want to upset Joey Noel. But I'm going to be honest, Pokemon Snap, not that great a game.
No, but I think it could be.
You think?
Yeah, I think Pokemon Snap could be a great game. Done right.
Absolutely. I feel like Wii U was its chance.
Well, actually,
because being able to move the controller around and have the TV work separately, key.
I think that, wow, now we're back to Star Fox Zero. How did we get there? I think that actually Pokemon Snap just was perfectly realized in Pokemon Go. I mean, that's really more.
That's true.
Kind of what we got. I guess Pokemon Snap did get a sequel. And
it
worked out okay.
It worked out all right for them.
But Fatal Frame, a big fan.
Yeah.
Also,
Fatal Frame 2, man. So scary.
But if you haven't played Beyond Good and Evil, I don't know. I don't think it works on backward compatibility. Does it? It might on Xbox One.
There was an HD remaster. So right. Yeah, I think it is.
Is it backward compatible?
I imagine that it is.
Okay, that's rad. Because if you haven't played that, it is worth your time. You're going to be like, what's the big deal at the beginning?
Yeah, the beginning is a little slow.
And it gets real good. It's an interesting game. And it's from another time. But it's a good curio touchstone on storytelling. Mm-hmm. There are games since then that have told stories better, but Beyond Good and Evil helped blaze that trail. It's an important part of history.
Definitely. Next news story. This comes from IGN. You kind of got this all together. I can read it and then get your opinion here, Jared.
Get hyped.
Get hyped. Red Dead Redemption. There's a sense of connection in Red Dead Redemption 2 I've never seen in a game before. Everything has its place and everyone has a purpose. Importantly, it's not just a veneer either. Other games give the appearance that life continues around you regardless, but stop for a second and it's easy to see past the facade. The guy with the broom isn't really sweeping his porch. He's stuck in a never-ending cleaning loop that even a gun to the head cannot break. In Red Dead 2, people exist. They have work to do and schedules to stick to, regardless of whether you're there to see it or not. But if you are there, they'll react accordingly. So point a revolver at the guy innocently sweeping his porch, and depending on his demeanor, he could drop to his knees and beg for his life, or at the opposite end of the scale, draw a six-shooter and retaliate. There's a deep-rooted connection between you, your actions, and the surrounding world, which is critical to everything that Red Dead Redemption 2 is. Rockstar doesn't just want you to play as an outlaw and protagonist Arthur Morgan, it wants you to live as him. From what we've seen, this level of choice is threaded through the entirety of Red Dead Redemption 2. Obviously, there's a beginning and an end, or possibly even ends, we don't know right now, but Rockstar's trying to blur the lines between what's a story mission and what's a side quest. Instead of presenting them all as opportunities given to Arthur, many are contextual too, depending on the time of day, where you are, and who you're with. Choices aren't just made at high levels either. You'll be presented with decisions every step of the way, and how you act determines the reaction you'll get back. When Arthur exits the camp and rides his horse along the dirt track, he'll soon meet other people. Much like real life, they're a mixed bunch. Some are pleasant and polite, others are less welcoming. You have complete control over how Arthur acts in the world thanks to a sophisticated interaction system represented by a number of choices displayed in the bottom right of the screen, such as the greet or antagonize. These dynamically change depending on a number of factors, including where you are, who you're talking to, choices you made previously in the interaction, and so on. And even though most of the HUD was switched off for the demo, it was still obvious how much freedom the player is given.
All right, so this is just a tiny excerpt from a huge exclusive breakout that IGN had this morning. If you go to IGN right now, there are four different RedNet stories.
Really well presented. Yeah, I love really what they did with the cover. Yeah,
just the breaking up all those different pieces. It looks great. But IGN's got a bunch of actual details on Red Dead gameplay, which is what everybody's wanted. So this is exciting about 20 different ways. We just took a tiny sample here of all there is for the self plug. Here for a moment.
There you go. You know what? Let me tee you up here.
Uh-oh.
We got Dirty Platypus says, hey guys, not a question, but I wanted to say that Jared's new Red Dead podcast is amazing, and I recommend all Kind of Funny Best Friends should watch it. Love you guys. Love all you do. And hey, keep fucking that chicken.
Oh, thank you, Dirty Platypus. Thank you so much for saying that. I really, really appreciate it. So I just started a new show. It debuted literally this morning. My first episode's with Alana Pierce. It's called Red Dead Radio, the Red Dead Great Redemption name. Podcast. Thank you. You like the name?
I do.
You helped come up with it, so appreciate that.
I know.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, he's like, I like that. But yeah, it's a new show all about Red Dead Redemption. We're starting with playing through Red Dead 1 step by step and talking about it as we go. Looking at the
Red Dead Redemption 1.
Yeah. That's right. The first episode, the John Marston episode, playing through that. Getting all the news from Red Dead 2. Our first episode's about the trailer, which dropped yesterday. We got that episode together pretty quick.
Yeah.
And then next week, now we've got all this news. Next week's co-host, ye old Game Over Greggy. Let's sit down and do that together. Gonna talk. You know that guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But we're also talking about the influences to Red Dead, things like last week we talked about Westworld. We'll be talking with Greg about a Western movie, things like that, and other stuff. And it all ties together and builds. So whether you're really familiar with Red Dead and love it and you're a super fan, it's going to be a good show. If you've never played Red Dead, it's a great opportunity to jump in and play along with us because we're going to start the game next week.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's kind of at a good sweet spot. And then right around when Red Dead 2 comes out is when we'll finish the first game. All that plug set. The reason I brought that up is there's so much information to disseminate in this IGN story. We could really spend a long time on it today. Mm-hmm. So I want to hit a few key points.
Hit them, Jared. All right.
First off, gameplay details, huge thrust and direction toward decision-making in an open world, which is one of the hardest things to do in video games. The fact that they've created a dynamic reaction system that appears to be gauged around every encounter and everything you're doing, really cool. Second, this people walking around and living real lives. So it's that Skyrim theory kind of taken to the nth degree. Like, wait, they describe a camp. You work out of this base camp and everybody's got chores. And you're not doing mundane, boring chores in the camp. You're just walking around through the whole thing and watching people each have their part in life. And you're interacting with that constantly. And you've got to keep people fed and keep them happy. And it's not supposed to be tedious. Rather, it's going to affect the relationship you have and open up new opportunities and affect the dialogue and affect the feel of things. The idea that I read a piece where they would have a breakdown of the trailer, and John Ryan, my friend, was pointing out, he was looking at a revolver in one part of the trailer and noticed that each piece of the revolver moves individually.
Wow.
Like the cylinder's turning and that they're all individual parts. This thing is crafted. That's exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, Rockstar, if anything, you know, when we saw GTA 5, we saw San Andreas for the first time and realized, wow, we haven't ever seen a world like this. Looking at that trailer, looking at the description that we got from these words, they played 45 minutes of the game and walked away radically impressed, if you get the spread. That's exciting. I like that get hype.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hyped.
Not everyone is, Jared. We have two people riding in.
Uh-oh.
James Rodriguez says, after the RDR2 trailer released yesterday, I noticed some negativity towards the game in the Kind of Funny Facebook group in regards to disappointment with the trailer. Some people felt the trailer was boring with nothing of importance shown, while others felt upset that Rockstar released a short trailer without any gameplay footage. Even today, with IGN's breakdown of the footage that they saw behind closed doors, there was no gameplay footage shown. While I'm still excited and can't wait to play in October, I can't help but wonder, is Rockstar shooting themselves in the foot from a marketing standpoint? Much has been said about how big Rockstar is as a name, and they march to the beat of their own drum. But do you think the hype for this game will die down if they don't reveal more soon, especially since they most likely will not be at E3 next month? Or do you expect any negativity to go away once the game's finally released? And then Titan Matrix says, why doesn't the Red Dead Redemption 2 trailer look better? The trailer they put out should be the absolute best, right? So why doesn't it look as good as Horizon, God of War, or Detroit? It only looks like GTA 5, which is good, but not great. Is this another Fallout 4 situation where they've been working on it in tunnel vision for so long that they aren't striving to look the best, just play great?
No, and no. They're taking their time. I could be wrong. I don't have magical secret knowledge. But Rockstar operates with the confidence of a company that has nothing to hide and expectations to build. Video game marketing 101, in my opinion, is the less you see of a proven property, the better. The less they choose to show you, the more restrained they are in their marketing, generally speaking, the better an indication that is of what's coming.
Mm-hmm.
And they
just look at God of War. We didn't know its release date until like a month before.
Yes. Let it build. Let the hunger build in the players' mouths. Let the discussion start. Let people clamor for that gameplay. And it's not like they're not showing the game. And right now we can get a vivid description of what it's like to play the game from people that have played it. That's on IGN at the moment. So you can see that. No, I'm not worried at all about the fact they didn't show gameplay. It's not just a matter of their own drummer. I think practically any studio with a thoughtful marketing department would take a product like this and play it slow, mm-hmm. and play it quiet. They have absolutely nothing to gain from showing us more, and they have absolutely everything to gain from waiting and letting the word spread person to person, heart to heart, letting it build. That's my thought. What do you think, Tim?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And again, we've been talking a lot about Red Dead Redemption in the last couple of weeks. And I was saying that, like, I really loved the first game, but it wasn't something that I'm like, I cannot wait for Red Dead Redemption 2. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm like, I'm interested in this. I watched the trailer. I'm like, it looks great. And I disagree with a lot of what Titan Matrix is saying. I think the trailer looks phenomenal. And right. I think that I put it in that same category as things like Detroit and God of War and Horizon, where it's like, I just can't believe games can be this stunning. Like, I can't believe that there can be this much going on. And GTA 5 was so impressive. I do feel like there's something there with the Fallout 4 conversation, where does it look like very similar to GTA 5? Yeah, but I feel like it is definitely the next gen refined version. Like, remember, GTA 5, now people play on PS4 and Xbox One, but it came out on PS3 and 360, and it just was beautiful there.
A feat of ridiculous engineering. And you look at things, there's several places. I think the art direction that I've seen already is the most stunning thing about that trailer. I wasn't on the day after the trailer came out, so I don't want to tread too much on territory I've already been at. But we talk about this on Red Dead Radio as well. But notice between each fade, between each cut, how the color palette changes. It's cinematic. It's like somebody, and I imagine this is exactly what happened, watched a bunch of Westerns and then went, you know, the American West is vast and every Western has a different color feel. Some are orange and deserty and John Fordy. Some are deep blues like Shane, some and muted. Some are bright greens with kind of and then a faded sun in the back. And it's just cutting from moment to moment to moment to moment like that. And every one of them, a completely different kind of beauty. They look like they're all filmed in different planets. Mm-hmm. You can practically smell the grass on that shot of the horses running across the field. I think that what I saw was impressive. And that town shot where you're seeing all those moving parts, little moving parts. Think about how rare it is to see anything in a game move besides grass.
Mm-hmm.
Look at everything that's happening in that shot. It is extraordinary. No, I'm not worried.
You get me hyped. Yeah, it's
something. I'm not huge on just getting overly excited about products that we have no reason to.
Me neither.
But this product, we have a ton of reason to believe it's going to be great. We got a history behind that. We got a studio that's shown a great degree of artistic merit. So to pull it back to the plug. And I do need your help. No kidding. Right now, Red Dead Radio is on the Hop, Blip, and a Jump YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/hopblipandajump. But you can also subscribe on iTunes right now. It's available on iTunes. Just hunt for Red Dead Radio, the Red Dead Redemption podcast. Subscriptions and reviews, particularly 5-star reviews, are the difference between the show making it and not on iTunes. You have a very limited window with iTunes to take
off.
Need
them reviews. Go review it, guys.
I need your help. And I'm going to bring it on Android services. I'm an Android user. Getting that done right now. But if you're on iTunes, please, please, please go leave this a good review. Take a listen. Subscribe. Please subscribe and listen to it. Keep it going. Even if you don't think you care about the game, the discussions of movies and Westworld and other Western video games and open world games are going to get there. And I believe we will get you on board that hype train. We're going to rob that hype train. It's going to be a heist. Man. Oh, man, heist coming. There's so much detail. We can just go over all of this. And, yeah, check it out on YouTube as well because I love that. All right. Thanks for letting me make that plug there, my friend.
Next news story. The 3DS is sticking around. This comes from Nintendo Life. You added this news story.
I did.
It's not like a fresh off the press thing. Like this happened a couple days ago. Yeah. But there's an interesting conversation here.
Yeah, yeah.
Nintendo has released an investor Q&A following the company's recent financial results briefing, detailing its stance on the current plans for Switch and 3DS consoles. Both Tatsumi Kimishima, the current president of Nintendo, and Shuntaro Furukawa, who will take over as president next month, were present to answer questions from the hottest topic being the new game that they announced for mobile platforms. When moving on to a discussion about the 3DS's future, however, some interesting little nuggets of information were put forward. Firstly, Kimishima reiterated the company's intention to keep selling the console into next year and beyond. The 3DS, this is a quote, the 3DS has an ample software lineup at a price point that makes the system affordable, especially for parents looking to buy for their kids. We expect that demand to continue during this fiscal year as well, so we will continue to sell the product. He then went on to suggest that Switch sales could have an effect on the 3DS's longevity. If consumers start to purchase a Switch console for each member of a family instead of one per household, just like how many did with the 3DS, the situation may change. Given that Nintendo Switch is a home gaming system that can be taken on the go, this situation may change if it grows from being a one-per-household system to a one-per-person system. But the price of a Nintendo Switch is not something with which most parents would buy a system for every one of their children in a short period of time. Moving forward, we will work to ascertain what kinds of play people want at which price points, and as long as there is such demand, we will continue to sell the Nintendo 3DS system. I see the product coexisting with a Nintendo Switch at this point in time.
So this is an important point he's raising here, and I think for those of us that don't have kids, we forget. You know, it's not just I want a Switch, it's I want a Switch. Or it's not just I want a 3DS, it's I want a 3DS. Not my sister, not my brother, this one is mine. And that's a big deal because the 3DS and the 2DS are at this point cheap enough that for many families, you can afford to buy one for every kid that's old enough to want one.
Well, I think in addition to that, you know, Nintendo has really mastered the system of putting the console out, putting out a revision, putting out the 2DS, putting out different price points, different options, so that there is that hype cycle, especially with younger kids. We're like, oh, I want that one. Then there's that. Maybe, like, let's say the older brother is the one that's really into the video games. They get the 3DS, but then as time goes on, the new 3DS XL comes out. They want that one. eventually next Christmas they get that, and the other one gets given down to the little brother.
You were there for that pass down, right? Do you ever get something passed down to you?
No, I'm the oldest one. So, Cool Greg out there, he got a lot of cool stuff.
Yeah. What'd you get handed down to you, Cool Greg? Is that all right? That was a hand down?
Yeah, that PS2.
Wow, no kidding. I love that PS2.
Totally not modded, totally legal PS2. Yeah, he is wearing, I gave him pants.
Do you have mod chip in your PS2?
I gave him pants. Well, no, it's one of the disc loading ones.
Oh, there we go. You gotta prop it open. I know what that's all about. Boom. That's right. Got to do that there. Yeah, but all right. So look, 3DS, obviously, Nintendo will leave it behind when it's no longer profitable. But it's interesting to see that at this point, it appears to still be a part of their marketing plan for a reason I hadn't really thought about. Because we don't think we can sell a Switch to three of your children yet.
Yet. Exactly. Yet being the key word. And that's the thing is, you know, we always talk about, especially with Andrea, about what is the next Switch iteration going to be? Mm-hmm. When's it going to happen? I feel like within the next year, mm-hmm. like a year from now, so by next April, we will know what a new Switch looks like. Whether that's a more portable, cheaper version or a more busty, like fully featured XL version mm-hmm. or both. And I don't think that there's a world where that doesn't happen.
I think of this one more as the XL. I think they'd go toward an Indestructi-Switch next, because the one that we have right now, while very well put together, is still something a kid can break, or an adult, fairly mm-hmm. easily. It's not impossible to screw that beautiful, beautiful screen up. So maybe something built around that template of the 2DS, the original 2DS. Did you mm-hmm. ever have one of those?
I didn't.
Okay, I love that thing. It's yeah, ugly.
I've played it. I don't like it.
Ugly. What do you not like about it?
Yeah, I just don't like the way that when your hands wrap around it, how the screen is tilted.
Oh, well,
I'm really particular.
You know, you're
about
not supposed to wrap, though. You're supposed to lay your fingers here. That's why the L and R come all the way down the sides.
The ergonomics of it, I don't like, but what I like even less is the 2DS XL.
Oh, really?
Very poorly designed system. The problem with it is the shoulder buttons,
uh-huh.
the hinge gets in the way.
I feel like it gets in the way of it.
And it's like, it's not comfortable to hold at all.
Now, when it came to the original 2DS, that was my favorite thing. So I felt the shoulder buttons, that curve, man. That just, oh, that was a sweet spot. Things, oh, it's ugly.
So
but
ugly.
You can hit it. You can run over it with a Sherman tank
mm-hmm.
and you won't break it. And it's like $50. And so, you know, and you have this
has
giant
some stupid,
library.
Dumb kid written all over it.
Exactly. It's fantastic. I just throw the thing in my bag when I'm mm-hmm. going on a trip, and I don't worry about what's going to happen to it. And there's enough software on it that I can play it forever. I really do like that, and I think that Switch will probably try to iterate on that at some point. I don't know if it'll be...
But see, in my opinion, I feel like that would be the mini version. Like, that wouldn't be the XL.
No, that's what I mean. It's the other way. I think the XL is what we have right now. I think what we have, I don't see it getting much bigger.
I do.
Yeah?
Because the thing is, especially with the, when you look at the bezel of the Switch right now, it takes up so much room. Like, I feel like the Switch, they know what they're doing. They have it built so it's a console and you can take it with you and the Joy-Cons and local multiplayer and all that. I do feel like they understand, and they're even saying it here, that there is an audience that doesn't care about a lot of that stuff and just wants a portable system. And I feel like they've needed to explain this is a home console for so long, but there's going to be that turning point where they're like, this is a portable.
So do you really think they'll make a version with no Joy-Cons or different Joy-Cons?
I think that there's a chance where in my opinion, they'd be very smart to have a cheaper version that is one thing, the Joy-Cons don't come off, still compatible with other Joy-Cons.
That would be really, I mean, okay, the compatibility.
That's the only way to get the price down. And
the compatibility might do it. Yeah, that you'd have, because I mean, literally the logo for the thing is click.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it stops being the Switch when you can't switch.
But the 3DS stops being the 3DS when there's no 3D.
Well played, sir.
And they did that. Well like, that's played what I'm indeed. Saying. Is yeah. like it's that doesn't matter, because just think of it as like a PlayStation Vita being put down and still being able to play with the DualShock.
But how in the world are you going to play, let's say, Mario Odyssey?
What do you mean?
I mean that you can't play Mario Odyssey without motion controls. Not right.
But, I mean, you can even on the Switch as it is.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't there be motion controls?
Because you could... Oh, yeah, because you just have extra... I don't know. Ah, I see your point.
It's going to happen, guys. I'm telling you.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. It really does.
Now, what I would want, that I think this is far far, far, far less likely. But the same thing I'm talking about, where it's one dedicated system, uh-huh. but bigger, and have it be an XL and have a nicer screen that there is no bezel. It does just take up like a beautiful 7 inches.
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't see them doing this with something that's 100% Switch compatible and still called Switch. I think that's a new product you're describing. And I think they could iterate toward that. But I don't see them abandoning that living room focus that quickly. The 3DS...
I don't think they need to. Like, what I'm saying is, it could still even be the same size, and the thing could still... When I dock my Switch, I don't take the Joy-Cons off. They're just on the side.
They're sitting there. But I mean, if you're selling spare Joy-Cons, now you're selling Joy-Con chargers. Now you're turning...
USB-C.
You're creating a very... very segmented market.
They've done it before, and they'll
do
it again.
Yes, they have. That's true. These are the people that gave us the Wii Balance Board. What am I saying?
we'll see. I don't know. I feel...
they're going to do whatever they feel is going to sell us more Switches, and they're probably right about it. You're correct. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
I'm
sitting here like, I don't know. Yeah, I'm being very wishy-washy, but I think I just don't want it to be, even though I don't know why I would say that, because I want more options. So, yeah. Give us everything we want.
Final news story of the day. Speaking of giving the people what they want. This is about Pikachu's origins.
Pika.
This comes from IGN. Ladies and gentlemen, prepare to have your minds blown. You're about to hear some shit.
He was actually a detective the whole time.
We got to the bottom of it. Yeah. Wow.
Oh, you all right?
There. Yeah. Despite Pikachu's official classification in the Pokedex, the original design for the popular Pokemon wasn't a mouse. Atsuko Nishida, a character designer and graphic artist who worked at Game Freak, revealed she based the creature's design for Pokemon Red and Pokemon Green on a squirrel.
Oh!
Quote, at that time, I was really into squirrels, so I wanted the character to have puffy cheeks. Squirrel tails are cute, so I wanted it to have a tail. However, I wanted the character to have a lightning element, so I made it shaped like lightning. The way in which Pikachu stores electric energy was also inspired by squirrels. For example, when hamsters stuff themselves with food, their entire bodies become round, right? But for squirrels, it's just their cheeks. After being given the name Pikachu, the character was officially classified as a mouse-type Pokemon and was given the electric rodent label by Game Freak founder Satoshi Tajiri.
Electric rodent, otherwise known as lightning rat.
Yeah.
For those Pika playing the Chew. Smash Brothers. Yeah, Chew. You got that Chew. You got Choo-Choo. That's the sound a mouse makes, mm-hmm. right? But no, that's kind of amazing. Never thought of him as a squirrel.
It's weird, man. I miss Fat Pikachu.
I love Fat Pikachu.
Like, where is he at, man? He's been working out too hard. Like, he lost all his personality and shit. He's just out there in the streets keto. Nowadays. Yeah,
he gave up that ketchup. He stopped eating that sugary ketchup.
Yeah, the ketchup. That's what it was.
Pikachu loves him some ketchup, man. But he knew he had to get healthy. This is kind of rad. Mm-hmm. I'm okay with it.
I love random weird shit like this.
I do too. And Pikachu has such a great design. What's like when you found out like Mario's name is Mario Mario? Mario Mario and Luigi Mario?
Mario Brothers.
Yeah.
This makes sense.
You know, they're like crazy. Or like, what is it? Yoshi's official name?
Sir Yoshifeld III?
Yeah. No, it's like Turid Theodorus. Like, it's like 6 words long. But this is beautiful.
So, it's beautiful.
A squirrel. Huh.
Oh, man. It was so long ago that we thought that Pikachu was a mouse.
Well, you know.
But one day we might change our thoughts. But until then, Jared, where would we go to find out what video games are coming to the mom and grop digital shops?
My friend, we go to the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kinda Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday. Nice.
Out today. Oh, a whole bunch of bullshit, let me tell you right now. Nihil Umbra on Switch. Thrones of Britannia, a Total War saga on PC. Dylond on PS4. Don't Die, Mr. Robot Deluxe on Switch. That sounds like a Jared game.
Yeah, it kind of does.
Japanese Mahjong on Switch. I swear to God, every week there's a Mahjong game on Switch.
Do not underestimate the world's palate, the hunger for Mahjong.
I guess.
It exists on an international scale.
Johnny Turbo's Arcade, Sly Spy. Coming to Switch.
Why does all this Johnny Turbo stuff keep happening?
I don't know. I've never played Sly Spy.
I'm still just, every time I see Johnny Turbo, I go back to the TurboGrafx-16. That he was their mascot. And I know this isn't the same one, but it just throws me back to really, really bad advertisements.
Yeah.
Ugh,
Perfect Turbo. Angle coming on Switch. Timberman Versus coming on Switch. Now, if you're asking, is that a game where lumberjacks face off against each other? The answer is yes.
Oh, excellent. Is it a fighting game?
I don't know what style of game it is, but they're lumberjacks.
Oh.
And finally, Professional Construction, the simulation on Switch.
You know, I designed a board game once called Mad Lumberjacks from Hell that was about lumberjacks fighting forest creatures.
That's cool. You ever play King of Tokyo?
Wait, that's the monster fighting game.
Yeah,
I've played that.
It's good. Love that game.
Pretty good stuff.
Yeah. New dates. Jared, this one's for you. Ikaruga, coming to Switch, May 29th, $15.
All right, yeah. So if you haven't, GamesCast isn't up yet. We talk about this there too. But real quick, grab this because this is a bona fide, fantastic classic game that just about anybody can enjoy. It's a shooter, top down shooter, not a not first person shooter. And it's startlingly creative. You played it before, Tim?
I did. Yeah, I never beat it. I played it on GameCube.
It was on GameCube. Yeah, it started as a Dreamcast game, then went to GameCube.
Yes, I'm very excited for the Switch version because it seems like a fun Switch game to me, and I love the also being able to play it vertically. That screen space is going to be awesome.
So awesome! It's going to be able to play that vertical shooter actually properly. But don't turn off your interest yet, even if you don't think this is your kind of game. Really simple premise. All enemies are either black or white through the whole game. Every projectile, every enemy. And you are always in one of two modes. You have a button that switches you between them, black or white. So you are immune to one color or the other all the time. So it's a shooter game where you're dodging stuff, but it's not just enough to dodge in space because you eventually reach the point where you're rhythmically changing your color constantly to avoid the onslaught that's coming at you. And it starts to take on this almost musical quality. I don't know how to explain it. It is unlike any other video game you've ever played. Ikaruga is a bona fide classic. It's by Treasure.
Music's great.
Yeah, music's great. It's by the hardest of the hardcore video game companies, Treasure. It is the kind of spiritual sequel to Radiant Silver Gun, the greatest shmup of all time, which I hope we'll also see. It's on. Still play it on backward compatibility on Xbox, but that's a perfect Switch game. I really hope that comes.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I'm excited. May 29th?
Yeah. May 29th. And it's two-player games. You're going to get those two little Switch controllers there. So that ought to be fun, too.
That could be great.
Ikaruga.
It's time for Read a Mail. It's brought to you by patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. I was telling you about this earlier. You can get Party Mode early. You can get Gamescast early. There's an episode of Gamescast going up either later tonight or early tomorrow, depending on when Cool Greg does it. I'm not sure. Do you know when?
I don't know when it goes up.
I guess it officially goes up Friday morning. So you can get Monday's episode as early as tomorrow for just $1. And again, earlier I was saying that it's really just 25 cents, and that's right. You get four episodes of Gamescast early for just $1. Watching them live. Come on, guys. It's worth the dollar. You're also just supporting things you love, and I appreciate you guys loving us. Thank you very much for that. And if you don't have the money, that's fine. Thank you guys just for watching. We appreciate you either way.
That's great.
Let's get to the reader mail. Eric K. writes in, "Hey, Tim and Jared. So here. I realize the likelihood of what I'm about to ask is probably under 1%, but the decade of dreams has me believing. Recently, on Gamescast, you guys talked about the potential for Banjo-Kazooie and Smash if Microsoft and Nintendo collaborate. But what if Sony and Nintendo collaborated to bring us the man of the hour, Kratos himself, to Smash on Switch? Tim, stay hype, son. Keep the dreams alive. Jared, just keep talking. It makes me happy."
Oh, thanks, Eric.
You're right. Very, very, very slim chance of that happening. Mm-hmm. I think it would be awesome.
Yeah, I do too.
Awesome if Sony would collaborate with Nintendo on Smash Brothers. Mm-hmm. Smash Brothers is a very unique franchise that is about celebrating characters and celebrating iconic video game moments. And yeah, getting some Sony representation in there would be super awesome. I don't think that either company would be above it, but I also think that Sony's in a place right now where they're not focusing on these type of deals and these type of situations. But crazier things have happened.
Yeah, I could see it working out, maybe as DLC later on. I could actually see that happening because they do compete, but they don't compete. They both probably have more to gain from a collaboration like this than lose. They really do. And I think they probably know that, except there may be a faction. For all we know, PlayStation All-Stars Battle Royale 2 or whatever.
It'll never happen.
That would be.
Adios.
You know, some sort of PlayStation All-Stars game might still be somebody's pet project or might be in development or might. That would kill this instantly. If they think there's a chance they're ever going to release their own character-based fighting or brawling game again, they're not going to do it.
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever see that. I do want to do an episode of Gamescast coming up where we pitch what that game would be if it were to happen. And like to come up with the rosters and stuff.
Oh, I'm in.
Sony's in a very different place than it was when they first put out.
The roster worked. The roster was not the problem with that game.
Yeah, well, the roster was a problem with that game.
It was a problem. Not the problem. They had enough cool characters in that game to make it work. I never had trouble with the roster.
Evil version of characters.
I had trouble with playing in a big open square where I was chasing a beach ball.
We had a PlayStation version of Smash Brothers, and it didn't include Solid Snake, Cloud, Crash Bandicoot, Spyro the Dragon. Get the fuck out of here. Get the fuck out of here. And there was a Cartoon Network Smash type game. That was fun too. That was a mobile game, right?
But what? The
Cartoon Network one? Oh, yeah? I remember playing it on mobile. It was good. But yeah, I don't think it's going to happen. Also, if it were to happen, I don't think it would be Kratos.
I mean, he'd be now, maybe. Mm-hmm. 6 months ago, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Now that the game has been received with so much renown. Now, if they showed the game, if they were like, hey, play this game, 3 months earlier,
mm-hmm.
maybe, but... I Nintendo may have more to gain from it than Sony. That's my only question about that. Like, what does Sony really benefit? It's not like God of War can be that much better known than it is now in video game circles. But I don't know. Maybe.
Game On, keeping with Smash, says, what's the likelihood of Smash Switch being in the running for Game of the Year? Given the history of Super Smash Brothers and the quality of the games, I imagine that this game is absolutely going to be in the conversation for mm-hmm. Game of the Year. I think that it's going to be in the running for Switch Game of the Year for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But in a year where we get things like God of War and Celeste that are new experiences that radically changed the genres that they're in, I don't think that Smash is going to be even capable of doing anything that surprises people on that level.
The only thing I could think of, I don't think it's going to happen, but it would be rad if it did. If we got Smash and we got everything we expect from Smash and we got Subspace Emissary, except it was this love letter, the mm-hmm. way that Smash is fighting mode is a love letter to Nintendo. If we got a trip through Nintendo-dom in the single player
kind
mode.
Kind of more similar to the adventure mode in Melee. Do you remember that?
More similar to that, but I'm talking about a fully fleshed out, beautiful, dripping one. But yes, closer to that.
Yeah, because in that one, you actually went through the Mushroom Kingdom, and you went through, there was, a Zelda dungeon and the Zeebs escape thing and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So it was just, there was a lot more actual Nintendo stuff. The biggest problem with Subspace Emissary and Brawl was that it was just a bunch of random, poorly designed characters and poorly designed locations that had nothing to do with Nintendo.
Yeah, you were trading off for the crossover.
With fucking awesome, epic CG cutscenes that are the coolest things in the fucking world. You know? Go on YouTube right now, after this show, and just type in Smash Bros. Brawl cutscenes and just watch them. There's an hour in that game of cutscenes that are just ridiculously stupid Power Ranger moments, like Captain Falcon jumping out
I remember this,
and then fucking Falcon punching all the Pikmin, and it's just so unnecessary. Princess Peach on the Great Fox as things are exploding just with her stupid parasol. It's awesome.
There is a lot of that.
Yeah.
It's very Power Rangers. I never thought about that.
Oh, before. Yeah. There's a scene where they're all on the mountain and they, one by one, do these moves. And, it ends and you see, Mario, Link, and all them. And I'm like, this is Power Rangers. It's awesome. I don't think that we're going to see a super fleshed out single player mode in Smash. And honestly, I don't know if it would be the right call to do that. I feel like as cool as it'd be and what you're talking about sounds awesome. I feel like that just takes way too much time and effort that should be, I would much rather be put into just more characters and
really
and more modes. Yeah.
Like even if it were, let's say you got it and it was the experiential love letter to Nintendo that if I gave you a giant video game budget, you could make.
That's the thing. I guess you're just describing my perfect video game. So it's if that were a reality, I'd be so stoked. But I just feel like knowing Sakurai, knowing how he directs games, knowing what he values and how his time management goes, I don't think it's likely or possible, especially mm-hmm. with this game coming out so soon.
Well, I don't either. Fighting games are hard to make. There's a reason we don't get too many of them in the contemporary age. They mm-hmm. are, they don't look impressive, but to make them right requires just ridiculous amounts of work.
Mm-hmm.
And so Smash Brothers is one of the few that's able to maintain a AAA budget around something like that. And they have to use all of it to make the fight again.
Yeah. And I just feel like there's when the moment that you start if they were to do that, what you're talking about with the single player, I just think that that takes the focus away from the gameplay of Smash. And even if they kind of went with it, we saw in Subspace Emissary, platforming in Smash and actually going left to right isn't fun. It's not fun to actually have to do the platforming. It's fun to take the platforms and fight on them in small areas, right? And I feel like where Smash single player exceeds is the mission mode, event mode, when it's like there is classic Nintendo situations that they put the characters into, but it is still the same gameplay.
Would you play, let's say Nintendo targeted a decent budget, not a huge budget, but a decent budget at a, you know, Kirby Easy Allies level of engineering Super Smash Brothers Adventure, a spinoff.
Yeah.
A 10-hour single-player game. Would you play it?
I'd play it, but I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I was like, that's not going to be a good game. It's going to be all right, because like the gameplay doesn't work for that.
You know what? I'm going to put it right now. I think I can make that game.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I challenge you.
Not by myself.
I got a lot of challenges for you, actually. Right. Where is it? Pickle says, my question's for Jared.
Uh-oh.
It's more of a request, actually. Up, I've noticed that Jared gets challenged to play games sometimes, and I was hoping that he would possibly play with Pretty Please with Sugar on Top, that he'd play a game on PS4 called Huntsman, The Winner's Curse.
Okay.
Jared and I are Suikoden. Suikoden.
Yeah, just brothers. Say Suikoden. It's fine.
Suikoden 2 is the best game ever, and I've been wanting someone to I trust to play this game and give their thoughts on it. Please, Jared, please, will you do this so I know it's worth it? Very cool art style, turn-based RPG. I love you guys no matter what, and at least thought I would ask. I know you're crazy busy. I was just hoping upon hope.
I promise to try, because if whenever somebody, he said the magic words. He said Suikoden 2.
Yeah.
You ever played Suikoden 2?
I did not.
You ever heard me rant about Suikoden 2?
Oh, yeah. I know you love it.
It's superb. Shout out to our friend Yuichi. Always talking about Suikoden 2.
Yeah.
But yeah, Suikoden 2 is spectacular. So he said the correct words. I got some catching up to do. But if I can find the space for another large RPG, I'm always looking for one. So no promises. I promise to look. I promise to try.
Huntsman, because
I
want
to play
curse.
Good games. Yeah. You don't want to be too busy to play good games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's check the way it you out. Live.
Thanks last, for the recommendation, Pickle.
Last question of the day comes from Dogs Should Vote. Which is a great, great name. Tim and Jared, my homeboys. While everyone's talking about Microsoft and PlayStation for E3, I can't help but sit here and think, is Nintendo going to reveal a new classic console? Will it be a Mini 64 classic, or how about a freaking Game Boy classic? Also, if it is a Game Boy, do you think they'd make it handheld only, a hybrid like the Switch, or just play it on the TV? If they do this, it will not be at E3. The NES Classic and SNES Classic were both random Tuesdays where we just woke up and had a press release from emails. Like, both times I remember thinking it was fake when I first saw it.
Yeah.
I was like, this came out of nowhere. It's so random. It seems like a very non-Nintendo thing to do, but they did it. Will they continue with this line? I feel like when the NES first happened and it was the big hit that it was, everyone was like, oh, like what games would be on the Super Nintendo? And I was like, this is a fun exercise, but they'll never actually do it. And then they did. Well, so now I'm like, I guess they're going to.
They sold 5.5 million of those SNESs. I mean, 5.28 million. And that was
$60.
Yeah. So that's, you know, right there, over $300 million in revenue.
Yeah.
Just from that's incredible. So yes, of course they're going to do it. They're effectively creating a really cute Android that they can plug an HDMI port into and sell you with great games on it. Virtual Console had a problem that became apparent fairly early on when they started out on Wii, which was they learned that people would run out and buy games they had name recognition for, games they remembered or had heard of. But they didn't get as many mass sales, I think, as they'd hoped on some of the smaller, more niche, but still awesome games that came out on that service, I think. And when you added in things having to rate the games ESRB, stuff like that, it became a really hard value proposition for certain people that wanted to do it. I think Nintendo looked at that and said, well, how can we add extra value to these games that we've already sold you? And they came up with the idea, we'll take the stuff everybody wants, stick it on one thing, sell it to you again, and we know you'll go run out and buy it. And they nailed it. Yes, I think we will see both an N64 and a Game Boy. I think the Game Boy will be portable. I think the N64 will not. I think the N64 is more likely of the two. I think the controller is going to be the killer on that.
Yeah.
Because that controller is
going to be expensive to make.
Yeah, it is. But N64 nostalgia, I think, probably outweighs NES or SNES nostalgia among Nintendo fans right now.
Mm-hmm.
I can't prove that, but I suspect it based on time I spent covering games and looking at how people reacted to things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think they'll sell approximately 6 quadrillion N64s.
Yeah, and I mean, the N64 is an interesting one to think about because, like, what does that game list look like? We should do this on Gamescast as well, try to figure out
there's 30 games you can put on
there. There is 30, and that's probably the entire N64's library. But
No, there's 30 good N64 games, and they could probably, they did 20 on the SNES and did fine. So they release it with 20, and there are 20 surefire winners. In the like 20 great games. I think the main thing's going to be they're going to have to do the same kind of uprising that they did on Wii, and they're going to have to do it in HD. But N64 games were muddy, and the remapping of the textures becomes... Do you know about the texture cache in the N64? Without getting too dull, they really had a problem putting big textures on surfaces. They tended to have to blur them because they couldn't put large textures on flat 3D surfaces. That was a hardware limitation. So that's why everything looked smeary. And it wasn't as bad on an old CRT.
Yeah.
When you do it in HD, even with a good up-res, it kind of looks awful unless you go in and really fiddle with it. So it's a lot of work, frankly, more work, I think, than what you do when you're trying to emulate the NES or the SNES from a visual perspective. And that makes it challenging as well for them. These games just don't look as good on HDTVs without a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll bet you they find a way.
Yeah. Well, what else we got left in the show? Let's see. Oh, it's time to squad up. Our boy Will Ramos, he's on Xbox One. His gamertag is WillRican524. That's WillRican524 on the Xbox One. He says, I'm looking to get back into Halo 5 and Halo Master Chief Collection. Still waiting on the big 2018 update 343. I played Halo religiously back in the Xbox in 360 days, and I just haven't played these titles as much, so I want to rectify that. Halo 5 especially is still the best pure online multiplayer shooter on consoles. It's been 2.5 years since release, and that game is still getting monthly content, playlist updates, rotations, new weapons, and maps. I'd love to play with some of the best friends. So go hit up WillRican524 and play with him. I know Sean Finnegan plays Halo 5 a lot, so go. I think his thing is Shot by Finnegan, so go check him out. Hit him up on Twitter. I'm sure he'll play with you.
Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely love it.
Now, it's time for one of them rotating segments.
Oh.
This comes from D. Pavanine. Not a question, but a suggestion.
Uh-oh.
Pass the Salt should be renamed Jared Gets Petty.
Oh, well, Jared's always petty.
I love that, though. Oh, that's real good. Do you have any salt? You have any petty thing today?
I was gonna be petty today.
Mm-hmm.
I was gonna get salty.
Mm-hmm.
And then recently I was online, made a comment about something that made me sad to see. And I just saw something that made me feel sad. And there was a lot of rising vitriol. People were just unhappy that seeing something made me feel sad. And very quickly, people kind of crawled out of the dark and started yelling. And that happens online to all of us at some point or another. I didn't particularly strike me or cause me pain or anything like that. Except looking and going and seeing that for so many people, as I went down their feeds, I was like, who is this person? I don't know this person. Falling down. This was their day-to-day behavior. I think it's fun to express our opinions. I think it's fun to complain kind of half-jokingly as we often do here. But today, I don't have anything salty to say because I think it's really, really important to take time and go, you know what? Stop and think before you criticize too harshly about whether or not the joke or the jab is worth it. Nobody hurt me there, but... maybe just today, when that little snark comment comes up, and I've done it many times myself, maybe it's time to go, oh, wait a minute. Maybe I can find something a little nicer to say today. So no salt today.
I like that, Jared. You're a good dude. Now it's time for You're Wrong. You can go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong to keep us honest.
Please do.
We got a lot here. My boy Kebab's definitely fucking letting us know what's up.
What's up, Kebab's? Too, kebabs are delicious. That's one of my staples on the keto
Kebab says Horizon Zero Dawn didn't come out this year. It came out in 2017.
He's correct.
Yeah, did we fuck that up?
Apparently we did. I don't remember doing that.
That must have just been a... Yeah. We must have misspoke.
Who knew? We're talking to you from the future.
Kebab says PlayStation US told Polygon that the average is 1 out of 5 PS4s sold as a pro, which means that of the... He says, which means that of the 67.5 million PS4 sold worldwide, 13.5 million are pros. But that doesn't make sense because
the stats
are just
it wasn't there the whole time. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you're gonna have a curve there.
So. Kebab says God of War has actually sold much more than Uncharted. Uncharted 4 sold 2.7 million in the first week.
Well, there we go.
That's crazy.
Well done. Well done.
Luca Wolf says the 360 version of Beyond Good and Evil HD is playable on Xbox.
Excellent. All right, there we go. Go play it. It's neat. Neat game. Thoughtful game.
Ignacio Rojas says Sony announced the release date for God of War 3 months before release, not 1 month.
There we go. So 3 months out. So it's like that Fallout 4 thing. Like four months out for that, wasn't it? I like when they do that. I like when folks are just like, you know what? There's a game coming.
Christian Buckley says Yoshi's full name is Yoshisaurus T. Munchakoopa.
There we go. Yoshisaurus T. Munchakoopa. You know, I was thinking about that. Another one, this blew my mind when I first learned it. You know the little Goombas, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's a little Goomba? What is it?
Mushroom.
No, it's not. It's a chestnut. He's not a mushroom. He's a chestnut. I've thought my whole life that the Goomba was a mushroom, but he's not. Chestnut.
What the fuck's a chestnut?
You know what chestnut is? A little brown thing.
I don't think I know what a chestnut is, if I'm being honest. Okay. I've heard of it.
All right.
You know, I'm Googling this right now.
Cool, Greg, can you bring up a chestnut? A chestnut here?
Chestnut.
Weirded me out when I learned this.
Nut.
There we go. He's a chestnut. That's the little Goomba right there. Kuribo.
See, here's the thing. Can you pull it up so people can see it? I buy that for Super Mario World. Because it looks like that.
Well, Super Mario Brothers. I mean, that's where it started.
But what I'm saying is, the Goombas in Super Mario Brothers
as time has passed,
look very different.
As time has passed, they have altered.
Than the Goombas start. In Super Mario
but that's,
World.
But they are Kuribo, which is Kuri's chestnut.
He's a goddamn mushroom. I'm standing by it. I ain't letting this shit. Pikachu being a squirrel, that's fine. These goddamn Goombas, they're mushrooms. I'll have it no other way.
Blew my mind.
Zyger says the Cartoon Network Smash game was called Cartoon Network Punch Time Explosion, and the game did come to console in 2011, PS3, 360, and Wii. They added XL to the title, added new characters, assists, and stages, along with more, and there was voice acting changes with the ports.
Yeah, that one, is that one the brawler, though? They sound like a Smash Brothers. I thought that one was more a brawler. Or maybe I'm separating two different games.
I think you are. Okay. There was like a Smash Brothers type game. Yeah. There's, you know, now there's a lot of the indie ones like Brawl Out, Brawlhalla and stuff. But yeah. Back then, there was Smash Brothers. There was a Ninja Turtle one on Wii.
That's right.
Smash Up, I think
let's,
it was
let's
called.
Just talk about Power Stone. Can we just go back to Power Stone? And back?
I want
back.
Power Stone on Switch.
Oh! I want
That'd
Power
be great.
I would run out. I would go dig up a PS2 if they put Power Stone on it. I mean, I just want to play Power Stone on something. I'm there. I guess I should just go get a Dreamcast.
Mario Fan 69 says, in the old Mario manuals, they claim the Goombas are mushrooms, specifically shiitake mushrooms. So I don't know, man. We got to get to the bottom of this. This is like the Toadstool Kingdom whiteboard situation where we had to figure out like the lineage of this whole thing. We got to get to the bottom of this. I'm saying that the Goombas in Super Mario Brothers 1 are mushrooms and the Goombas in Super Mario World are these chestnut motherfuckers because they look exactly like that.
Yeah, they do look like chestnuts. Yep. I'm still amazed that Pikachu is like he could have been Pikorisu. Like he would have been like Pika Squirrel. That would have been really strange.
So I'm going to end this with saying something that might blow your mind.
Oh, I love having my
speaking
mind
of blown. Pokemon, speaking of squirrels.
Yeah, what's going on?
Now, a lot of people are like Squirtle, right?
Okay.
It's like he's a turtle and he squirts.
Turtle and so he
that's
squirts.
Right. Yeah. But another way to look at it is that he's a squirrel turtle because you look at his little fucking tail. Squirrel.
Ooh. Okay. No,
man.
I think there's some.
We're getting here. We're getting deeper. Tomorrow will be me and Greg on Kinda Funny Games Daily. Until then, I love you. Jared, thank you very much.
Thank you.